one done with a bad purpose, without justifiable excuse, without grounds for believing it's lawful, it necessarily implies knowledge of particular conduct would likely result in illegality. The Commonwealth, in its response, indicates that this standard may be akin to criminal negligence, and that may be all the Commonwealth has to prove. I disagree with that based on that definition of willfulness in the cases. However, even under a criminal negligence standard, the Commonwealth hasn't proven that these actions were willful. The court looks at the case cited by the Commonwealth in its brief, Barnes versus Commonwealth from this court. It makes a fine distinction between the facts in Barnes and the facts in Ellis, upon which I relied in my brief. In Barnes, the mother of two children, age 2 and age 4, left the children at home, drove to the grocery store, and then did not come back. The children had left the house, gone to the neighbor's house, were sent home, and then came back when the police were called. In Ellis, as the court is well aware, the mother left her apartment building, went to a neighbor's house 30 to 75 yards away. The court found that was not willful. In Barnes, under 40.1103, the court found that the actions were criminally negligent. And in Barnes, this court made the distinction between those two cases, although there were factual similarities, that in Ellis, the actions were not willful because the mother remained in earshot. The mother could have been called by a neighbor if something had gone wrong. The mother was close enough that she could have been summoned if there was a problem with her children. In Barnes, because the mother had left, was at the grocery store.
Well, it sounds like you're equating willfulness with criminal intent. I'm not sure that's a correct analogy. Okay.
In the Commonwealth's brief, the Commonwealth said that the standard is one of criminal negligence under willfulness. I think willfulness is higher.
Well, it's got to be a deliberate as opposed to a negligent or unintentional act.
Correct.
Number one, and number two, it's got to be done without lawful purpose or any reason to believe it's lawful. I mean, the situation we have here is, you know, mother just sort of dumps a carload of kids on a poor store employee and says, "I'll be back in a couple of minutes," and shows up, you know, briefly, and then basically it's over an hour before anything happens, and doesn't know these people. They're strangers. I mean, for all we know, they're predators. I mean, we don't know much about these employees, except they tried to do the right thing to the extent that they were able to do so within the framework of their job responsibilities. So the question really is that sort of conduct that is punishable, I guess, under the particular statute in question? Isn't that really where we're at?
Yes, I have a few responses to the court's
phrase. Well, interesting to hear them.
First, in terms of willfulness, I think, again, I'm trying to, in my argument I just made, even if the standard were negligent, which I think is less than willfulness, it's not negligent based off the distinction Barnes makes between Ellis and Barnes. This case is much more like Barnes, much more like Ellis, than it is like Barnes. In terms of the court's comment about predators, I think that applies to both willfulness and parental care, but it's worth bringing up that the danger in the Commonwealth, in its reply, cited quite a bit about the dangerous circumstances, danger that could have been come to the children, the child rather, in this case. That's not relevant. If danger were relevant, if endangerment were relevant, this case would have been brought under 371.1 or
How can danger not be relevant when we have to assess the willfulness and in the context of the facts of this case? How can dangerousness not be a factor?
Willfulness is described as likely will result in injury or illegality. I think issue we're facing, obviously, this court nor the Supreme Court has dealt a lot with this particular statute, and most of the cases that both parties were forced to rely upon deal under 40.1103 or 371.1. Both of those deal with endangerment. So a willful act under those two statutes would necessarily imply conduct likely to result in injury, as that is the substantive standard, the corpus of both of those offenses, whereas in this case the corpus of the offense is leaving the child without parental care.
So well, it's actually not. It's caused by its lack of parental care caused by the unreasonable absence of the parent. It seems to me that this is willful in the sense that she willfully left the children. The question to me is what she did unreasonable?
I would disagree that it's willful. It's intentional. But in Virginia, willfulness is something more than intentionality.
Yeah. But where do all of these discussions of willful, intentional, criminal negligence, don't they all come from the child endangerment statutes?
because we have very little interpreting the contributing statute.
So, I mean, you're importing those in, saying that, that those concepts have to exist when all the statute requires is an unreasonable absence.
A willful unreasonable absence.
It doesn't even say, it just says unreasonable absence.
371, the contributing statute, says that the person must willfully leave the child abused and neglected. That's obviously cutting out a lot of phraseology in between, but it has to be willful. The person willfully left the child without parental care.
Willfully contributing, encouraging.
Correct. So the unreasonable absence, leaving with child without parental care, would necessarily have to be willful. It's a little bit complicated because we're obviously dealing with two separate statutes.
Well, let's talk about reasonable. Is it reasonable for a mother to park her car at Trader Joe's and go shopping for an hour by asking a store clerk, keep an eye on my car?
Do I think it's inattention, inadvertence?
No, you think it's reasonable.
I think it's reasonable because we have to...
If we gather together a group of 100 mothers, how many of them would raise their hands and say, oh, I think that's a very reasonable thing to do?
And that's not the inquiry this court has to make. I think, first of all, unreasonable absence has to be read, those two words, as a term of art. That phrase, that term of art, is limited by mental or physical incapacity based off the canons of construction, because unreasonable absence is such a broad...
Counsel, it's a common term, common terminology, plain language. There's or between each of these things. Let's assume we disagree with you that you combine it with the physical and or mental abuse, which, frankly, with the ors in between, I think it's a reasonable interpretation of the statute for us to say it stands alone. So let's go back to Judge Petty's question and let's parse through the facts here and tell us how the actions of this defendant cannot be characterized as an unreasonable absence. You don't dispute absence. She was clearly absent from the vehicle for an hour. So the question becomes reasonableness. And how is it not unreasonable under the set of circumstances where she leaves the child, telling the first employee that she's going to be gone 5 minutes. She leaves the child in a running vehicle parked in a fire lane with two dogs in the car and the window open. And she tells the guy, who she doesn't even know, I'm going to be gone 5 minutes. An hour later, when he decides, based on his own responsibility, he decides that he's going to get a second employee involved. How is that not unreasonable?
I think the second employee came in about 20 to 30
right.
minutes later. The total time was somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour.
Right, and at some point she comes out and gets the keys and goes back in.
Correct. Two responses to the reasonableness. One, the child was not left completely alone in the back of the parking lot. In the Whitfield case cited by the Commonwealth, the person left the child in the car when he's supposed to drop him off at daycare. He then returned home, turned off his cell phone, and went to sleep. Court in that case, again, decided under a completely different statute. Court in that case found the criminality in that and took time to say, yes, sir.
Those statutes are felonies, are they not?
Correct.
Well, obviously, this is a misdemeanor. There's got to be a lesser standard involved for the misdemeanor to differentiate it from the felony. Why do you keep trying to equate the felony, the requirements for a felony conviction, and import them into a misdemeanor conviction?
The difference in standard, I think, is the resulting risk of danger or actual harm. 371A is actual harm. 371.1, B, is risk of danger. This is something less, leaving without parental care. That's the distinguishment between felony and the misdemeanor. The reason I keep going back to those statutes is because reading all these statutes in part materia, all of them having to deal with child welfare and what...
I agree with you. I don't think this is a felony child endangerment. The statute, the misdemeanor, obviously, is designed to punish conduct that doesn't rise to that felony level.
Correct.
And so the key to me is the factual finding that the trial court made that, nope, under these facts, that was just an unreasonable absence.
And go back to Judge Decker's point, I think the two things that differentiate this case from the other cases, whether we credit them or not, is that people were watching the car. The car was not alone. People were there to get the mother. Secondly, she was within earshot. This is where willfulness, parental care, and unreasonable absence start to conflate. But it's only child is without parental care due to the unreasonable absence. So even if the court were to find that the absence was unreasonable, which the other point is there was evidence that she was delayed with a manager at the register.
So the problem I have with your argument is that, as I understand this record, it was never disclosed to the original employee that there was a child in the car in the first place. In other words, the mother just says, I'm going to go shopping for a couple minutes. Would you watch my car? And so the only responsibility the employee is assuming is responsibility of personal property on a temporary basis. And she, you know, not disclosing that there's a child in the car, taking on the delegation of there's no in loco parentis, I guess, it seems to me here. And so I don't know how you get there from here if you're trying to argue that somehow it was not reasonable or the fact that the employee assumed the request, the responsibility over the car somehow equates to assuming responsibility over a child that such to negate the mother's responsibility over that child or to subsume or supersede it, whatever the right term is.
I would agree with the court if Mr. Campos, I believe his name is, the first gentleman, had gone out, seen there was a child in the car, and then went back in, made a call, talked to a manager, did anything, but he chose to stay there.
But counsel, it wasn't ever his responsibility to do that. Yeah. In other words, the mother could have easily picked up her child like every other mother and taken her into the store and shopped. Instead, she chose to go in and tell a stranger who she didn't know anything about to would he go watch the car. He went outside and took the responsibility when he saw what was in the car, that it was a child, to remain there to the extent he could, and then to find somebody else to substitute. She never even found anybody else to substitute. So that car could have been, had it not been for the responsible nature of the first employee, that car could have been left for some 20 or 30 minutes by itself.
And my final point before I reserve time is that even if the court were to find an unreasonable absence, the child was not without parental care, because at any moment she could have been summoned to deal with anything.
Your argument is that the clerk at the Trader Joe's is a other person standing in loco parentis then?
There. I don't think that's necessary, but the court could read it like that.
Well, it has to be somebody in the statute. Parental care, parent, guardian, legal custodian, or other person standing in loco parentis.
The parental care is not modified by the last phrase. That's unreasonable absence. Parental care could be provided by a person who's not necessarily present, is my argument. If that person is able to get there within a reasonable time. With that, I'll reserve for the thought.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Campbell.
May it please the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. Besides the jury instruction issue that we haven't talked about today, the main issues in this case are all fact-specific questions for the jury. And it's our position that these should not be set aside because a reasonable fact finder could find that all these elements were met, and I'll march through them quickly.
Could you first, let's talk a little bit about willful first. Could you clarify?
That's what I was going to start with. No court has defined willful in the context of this misdemeanor statute, but they have willfully generally is considered something that's not accidental. It's without. It's done in a bad. I forgot the terminology, but the key one is that it is done without justifiable excuse. And I think that's key in this case. I can see a situation where a mother may leave a child outside of a store and run inside, and she may have a justifiable excuse to do so.
Well, the case law, Barrett, I guess Barrett's the case. And you're right, there's no case directly on point with regard to this particular statute, but there are a bunch of cases that talk about willfulness in different contexts. And here, though, it seems to be the law of the case is such, the jury was instructed that it required a bad purpose or a lack of a justifiable excuse. That's a disjunctive in there.
Yeah.
And so it seems to me, assuming no contest with that particular jury instruction, then the only issue is there evidence or is this conduct being, you know, intentional? Is it justifiable to basically turn your child over to a complete stranger?
Yeah, and that's my point. I don't think it is justifiable. I can see a situation where it could be justifiable. Perhaps the child is sick and you can't take him out of the child care seat. And she's gone for 5 minutes and then she comes back. But I think a reasonable fact finder could find that this was completely not justifiable for her to do this. To say to one store employee, could you wash my car for 5 minutes? And then he comes out and discovers that there's a child in here. And then she's gone for 30 minutes. And then he gets another person to look at it.
You wouldn't suggest, would you, that it's criminal for mom to pull up in front of the dry cleaners and leave her 2-year-old in the back seat while she runs in and picks up the dry cleaning and runs back out again?
Can she see?
The kind of thing that happens every day.
That happens. And that may be justifiable.
Well, it's not unreasonable.
Or unreasonable absence under that element. But
there comes a point in time where what happens every day becomes a very uncommon occurrence and raises people's eyebrows. And where that line is crossed is a factual determination for the trial court, isn't it?
Absolutely. Anytime we have these children, child abuse and neglect cases, they're by their nature have to be fact specific. And
so, counsel, address opposing counsel's point about why this, at least the first employee, is not assuming the responsibility that the parent has placed upon him, and why that person is not a guardian or somebody who is assuming parental care.
Well, that whole line of thought that person is assuming the parental care comes from the felony statute. And the jury wasn't instructed on that part. That's another assignment of error that he says that should have been instructed, but they weren't instructed. So that's sort of the first point, is that whole assuming, taking the care comes from the felony statute.
Which has an element. I mean, the Snow case that's relied on there. I've read Snow and I'm familiar with it. But that relates to an element that's not present in this statute.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not present in this statute.
Which is why the jury instruction was rejected.
Right. And that's basically my argument on that, is that that comes from a Snow case. It's this language from Snow that comes from a different element, from a different statute, and that there was no abuse of discretion in rejecting this jury instruction. The other aspect is that it can't be the case, and I'll go ahead and sort of blend that into my second element here with parental care. It can't be the case that you can leave your child in a public place and then another person comes up and finds the child, and therefore the parental care element is satisfied. That just can't be the case, that when you find someone, when a complete stranger finds a child, then therefore the child has parental care. Also, I would point out that the statute applies to any person. So just because there is other people around this child or taking care of the child doesn't mean that the mother still neglected her duties as a parent and neglected to provide parental care.
Counsel, what about your opponent's argument that the employee who assumed responsibility for watching the car when he left the car never did attempt to find the mother or call her back or let her know that he was leaving the car?
I'm not sure that's his responsibility to do that. He was asked to look after the car. He didn't make some arrangements with another employee, so I guess he thought he didn't have to do that. And then that second employee watched the car as much as she could. But there was times when she was in and out of the store, and there was times when no one was watching the child. I'm not sure if that answers your question. But let me just go to the last issue, is the unreasonable absence. This has to be a fact-specific question on whether this absence was unreasonable.
Well, whenever the term reasonable or unreasonable is used, that sort of implies a factual determination.
Yeah.
By jurors in this case.
But yeah. And also for the fact that we're dealing with children here. I mean, this is a toddler-aged child.
I think some evidence of a two-year-old?
Yeah, at most a two-year-old. It was 10 months to 2 years old. The child was in a seat, in a child safety seat. It's not the case. I mean, I grew up, and I can remember being left in the grocery store parking lot, but I remember it because I was...
You know, it's one thing to leave a 16-year-old sitting in the stereo.
Yeah, and it's another to leave a toddler. And I think the jury's fact determinations in each of these three elements, the willfully, without parental care, and unreasonable absence, we're not unreasonable, and I think that the court should affirm this case based on that.
We have about 2 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. It goes back to what does parental care mean, even if the court finds against Ms. Miller on the other two elements and the jury instruction. Even if she were unreasonably absent, even if she were willfully so, what does this court interpret the legislature's words parental care? It has to be like the data case from this court, while unpublished, mentioned, a child who is not changed.
Which case? I'm sorry.
Data, D-A-T-T-A, unpublished, and it dealt with mental incapacity, so slightly different. But necessarily the court found a lack of parental care. That child was unchanged in a filthy apartment. Food containers were everywhere. The mother, with CPS involvement, seemed completely lost in her child-rearing.
But that was a 17-year-old, if that's the case. Is that
I don't think that's included in the opinion.
I think that's the opinion I wrote.
I can't remember that. But it was
a 17-year-old who could very well clean up for herself.
No. The child in data, I believe, was much younger.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a different case.
I'm not sure how old the defendant was, but I believe the child in data was much younger. there were soiled diapers. So that is a child left without parental care because a parent is simply not doing what a parent does, not feeding, clothing, cleaning. This child could have been given all of those services by Ms. Miller. She was mere yards away, just like the defendant in Ellis was mere yards away versus the defendant in Barnes, who was substantially farther away. She could not have been summoned.
Well, counsel, your position would have to be that, as a matter of law, the record does not support that the child was without parental care, correct?
That is correct.
That's your position, that as a matter of law.
There's nothing in evidence that says the child was without parental care during that time. If there are no further questions, I thank the court for its time.
All right. We'll come down to Greek Council, and the court will take a short recess.